Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, David Onick. Tonight, we look for deals in the Bay Area's often prohibitively expensive housing market. They are hard to find. Median house prices in San Francisco leapt to a record high in April, rising nearly 26% from just a year ago. Half of the homes sold were on the market for fewer than 2 weeks. There is grave concern about housing for the working class, and the ecosystem of Bay Area housing is so challenging that middle-class residents are also in a serious bind between exorbitant rents and the out-of-reach real estate market. What are the tricks to identifying up-and-coming neighborhoods where real estate might be more affordable? What are the best trade-offs to make? And as buyers encroach on neighborhoods with more budget-friendly housing stock, will this further inflame concerns about gentrification and displacement? Joining me in studio to discuss these issues are Riaz Taplin, founder and CEO of Riaz, Inc. Welcome to the program, Riaz.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined in studio by Naomi Glass, associate broker at Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Welcome, Naomi.
Thank you very much.
And on the phone, we have Amy Fishman, executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Welcome to the program, Amy.
Thank you so much.
And we're also joined by Rachel Flynn, director of city planning for the city of Oakland. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We also invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on our website, klw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. Okay, let's get started. Let me start with you, Riaz. When people ask about up-and-coming neighborhoods where there might be more affordability in the Bay Area, what are the signifiers of those types of neighborhoods right now?
So I think that, you know, in thinking about the Bay Area, you know, there's not much in the way. The word affordable is, like, furthest from the conversation than one can imagine. But I think that, you know, basically Oakland has served as this kind of like it's this area in the middle of the Bay Area, the most accessible part of the Bay Area. It's also the most affordable part of the inner Bay Area. So if you look at like median home prices in San Francisco, you're looking at something around like $1.1 million. And in Oakland, we're looking at something like $507,000. And over the last, you know, I would say in large part, starting in the 90s when Jerry Brown was mayor of Oakland, you saw the beginning of a renaissance in Oakland. And I think in the last few years, that renaissance has really come a long ways. So I think that if you look at areas such as, you know, Temescal in Oakland, you know, even West Oakland, which used to be really a no-go zone, there's interesting cultural phenomenons coming up and providing interesting housing opportunities in West Oakland. And then the area around the lake is really, you know, very attractive for families at this point, and you still have very affordable price points.
So Riaz makes a very interesting point about what actually does it mean, what does affordable housing mean in the Bay Area right now? And Amy Fishman, I'd like to give you an opportunity to answer that with the Nonprofit Housing Association. What does it mean to be affordable in the Bay Area right now?
Well, the first I want to just say that there is good news, and I'd love to share it tonight.
Please do.
To a call to action, because we all know the bad news. The market is terribly out of balance. Too many working families, seniors, people with disabilities are being priced out. And now even the middle class is hurting hard. This is hurting employers. This is growing commute times. This is hurting families, our air quality. It's making the Bay Area lose the qualities that we love so much about it, that make it a special place to live. So when we talk about affordable housing, it's talking about the American dream in an inclusive way. So it's not just homeownership, it's also about renters. Because in many counties, there's about, let's say, in San Francisco and Santa Clara, we have about two-thirds of residents are renters. And Alameda and Contra Costa counties, nearly half are renters. So we have to talk, in addition to talking about homeownership, we are also talking about improving safety, security, and opportunity for working families, working people, for seniors, and for people with disabilities. So it's a family of four making $50,000 a year or a family of four making $80,000 a year. It's housing for teachers and firefighters. it's much broader than what we often talk about it, and now everyone is hurting in the Bay Area. So that's what we're talking about with affordable housing.
And Rachel Flynn, Director of City Planning in Oakland, what are you seeing in your city? As Riaz said, a lot of folks are looking to Oakland now. Tell me what kind of changes you've seen there in recent years.
We are seeing a lot of new and renewed interest in Oakland, which we think is a great thing. It sends a message to the region, to the country, that Oakland is a great place to live. It gets safer and safer. It gets more and more vibrant. There's more things to do for individuals and families. And so we see this influx not as all negative, but a lot of positive, that people now, some have discovered Oakland and others rediscovered it and want to be part of what we've always thought of as a great city. With that, anytime you have increased demand for any place, you're going to see increases in prices. And so one of the things we want to do is see more supply to meet that demand so that we don't see displacement, so that we can invite people of all income brackets, ages, demographics, come to our city, and we welcome them with open arms.
And Naomi Glass from Coldwell Banker, what do you tell the folks who are working with you saying, where are some spots that I can look that are going to be reasonable for me?
The first thing I discuss with a buyer is which is more important, location or property type. There are five or six property types that a buyer can consider in San Francisco, the most expensive being a single-family home. Then beyond that, you've got condos, co-ops, multi-unit buildings, 2 to 4 units or more than 4 units. And as you change property types, they become more affordable. So either someone is location-oriented or property type-oriented or both. But basically, I kind of think of buying a home as a jigsaw puzzle. All the pieces have to fit for it to work for the individual person. Sometimes I need to move an individual from a thought of a district north of Market to a district south of Market. In San Francisco, even moving 1 or 2 blocks literally significantly changes a price point. Or if they're set for one particular neighborhood and they think they want a single family home, they may need to switch to a condo or even co-invest with a friend in a 2-unit building because they're paying half or a third the price per square foot buying a 2-unit building than buying a single family.
And how receptive are the buyers you're working with to that feedback? Do some of them have their mind set, this is the type of home I want, this is the type of location I want, and how willing are they to expand their thought process in terms of what might be acceptable to them?
I have found the buyers that I've worked with extremely flexible. They're open-minded to recognizing that in order to achieve what they want within a certain budget, certain parameters have to change, and they're willing to be flexible.
And Rachel Flynn in Oakland, what are you doing as Director of City Planning to let prospective buyers know, hey, Oakland is a great place to live, and you know, all the ingredients that you're looking for, if you aren't already looking at Oakland, expand your choices and come take a look at what we have to offer here?
You know, it's interesting, David. We don't have to do a lot of advertising. The word is out about Oakland. Media outlets like yours and others are, you know, at the local level, regional level, state level, national level, are all abuzz about Oakland. It's just been overwhelmingly good to hear this. And people know that it is more affordable than San Francisco, that it's a lifestyle they want. We have more BART stations than any other locality in the Bay Area, and that's really important to people. And also is an important factor with affordability. When you figure owning a car costs you $5,000 to $10,000 a year, if you can let that go, you can put more money into where you live and into other things, going out to eat or whatnot. And so there are many solutions, we think, to the affordable issue, as Naomi was mentioning and others, whether you have a smaller unit than what you would normally get if you lived out in the suburbs, if you would have, you know, two, three roommates rather than live alone. Secondary units, we're promoting more and more of those. So if someone wants to buy a home, they could have a secondary unit and have some extra income to pay for that mortgage. So there are lots of what we call organic ways to address affordable housing, given our budget constraints. At the federal level, we've been cut. At the state level, we've been cut. And at the local level, we're working to keep up.
And Amy Fishman from the Nonprofit Housing Association, to what extent do you see the need to educate people on both all the different kind of more hidden neighborhoods that are out there, as well as the different options that Naomi was speaking about, rather than simply a single-family home?
Well, let's make sure that we understand the problem here, because over the last decade, we've built 84% of the luxury housing needed to meet demand, but only 26% of the affordable homes needed to meet demand. So no city in the Bay Area has produced enough housing for the workforce, for middle and low-income families.
And Amy, are those statistics, are those statistics for the Bay Area overall?
Yes.
Thank you.
And at the same time, what we're doing is housing has become this incredible speculative investment. And we've seen what happened in the last market cycle with the foreclosure crisis. This is the same situation. It's the symptom of a broken market. And what we really need to do is beyond, you know, trying to help people find deals in neighborhoods, what we really need to do is do better planning and deeper investment in housing, because homes, having stable, safe, affordable homes, is the foundation of our economy. And we know that there are many solutions out there that work. And so I would like to encourage the conversation away from, oh, how can people go and find those secret deals, because there just aren't enough secret deals out there. People are hurting today. And instead, let's focus on the solutions that we know work. It means sharing the benefits of growth and development that is happening. We've had an explosion of jobs, and what we need to do is have a jobs housing fit to make sure that as jobs are being created, we're creating the housing to meet the full range of income levels that are being developed. And so there are impact fees that can be passed that have happened in many cities across the Bay Area, and that's one successful way of doing it. It's one piece of the puzzle to try and address this big problem that has many solutions.
Amy, I really appreciate you pushing the conversation in that direction, which is exactly where we're going to be headed in just a moment. And I really want to hear from everybody about what kind of policy solutions, what can be done at the policy level to alleviate what's happening out there. But first, Riaz, I want to give you an opportunity to jump in.
Amy, I think in keeping with that vein, it's important to ask, like, how we got here. Like, so, you know, it's not like this is not an – people aren't aware of this problem, right? The Bay Area has been an explosive place of growth for, you know, let's say at least since the 1950s, right? Why do we consistently not supply the market with enough housing, right? And basically over the last 50 years, there's been progressive housing policies and planning policies that do two things. A, restrict the amount of housing that can be built and make the process of building it incredibly difficult. So if you look in, like, you know, a place like Houston, Texas, or Dallas, you know, how long does it take to actually get a permit to build a house? What share of your income is housing consuming? So I did a little research, right? And, you know, the average, if you take the median house price in a place like Dallas, Texas, which is $257,000, right? And take the median house price in a place like San Francisco, it's $1.1 million, plus or minus. So basically, and if the median income in San Francisco is $73,000, median income in Texas $48,000, basically housing in San Francisco would be consuming 103% of median income, of your after-tax median income, as opposed to 31% in Houston, in Dallas. And basically, you know, this is simply as a result of bad planning policies, right? You know, cities like San Francisco, Santa Clara County have done an enormous amount to restrict what can be built on a lot and the average amount of time it takes to actually get a project built. The average project in San Francisco now, it's my understanding, it takes 7 years to get up out of the ground. So I think this is the key issue that has to be resolved. And I think, you know, Rachel in Oakland is doing an enormous amount to make Oakland kind of the answer to the problem.
Thank you, Riaz. Let's take a short station break, and then we'll come back and start to talk about what those policy solutions are. You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing Bay Area real estate with our guests, Riaz Taplin, founder and CEO of Riaz, Inc., Amy Fishman, Executive Director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, Rachel Flynn, Director of City Planning in Oakland, and Naomi Glass, Associate Broker at Caldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. We invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions and comments. Are you a prospective buyer who has an experience to share or a question for our panel? Are you feeling financially stretched but want to stay in the Bay Area? What do you think local government should be doing to support affordable housing? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment on our website, klw.org. So, Amy Fishman, I'd like to come back to you. You talked about impact fees as something that can help alleviate the problems we're currently facing. Can you expand on that for our listeners?
Yeah. So the way that it works is that for every new market rate home that gets built and every new office that gets created, those generate the need for more affordable housing, whether it's someone at the Pete's down the street that's going to serve you your coffee, whether it's someone at the grocery store, whether it's the workers that are going to clean the offices, whether it's the person that's going to cut your hair, whatever are all of those social service needs that get created when you have growth. And so a fee is put in place to help mitigate those needs. And so it's a housing impact fee on market rate homes, or whether it's a commercial linkage fee to link the need for affordable housing that gets created through office growth. And one aspect about this is that while fees are really critical and they're a really important solution, they address the new need that gets created. They don't address the existing deficit that we are facing for years and years, as Riaz talked about, the lack of building. So we need to layer up the different solutions. There's not going to be one silver bullet, but all of these different issues play a really critical role, including fees. And we're seeing them in city after city, and in San Mateo and Santa Clara and many other places. And right now the city of Oakland is considering, they're doing their Nexus study to consider these impact fees as well.
And Rachel Flynn, that's actually where I wanted to go next, Director of City Planning at Oakland, to talk about Oakland and impact fees.
We hired a consultant back in December, and they are looking at both, you know, the legal issues involved and also the nexus, as Amy said. You know, how much is it fair to put on new developers to pay for a social need in our city? And we have to look at the whole picture. So, for example, the other localities that Amy mentioned, they have a lower property tax rate. Oakland has one of the highest in the region. We're at 1.43%. For example, Emeryville's only at 1.13%. Well, those get passed on to developers, and who then pass them on to renters. We have what's called a rental business tax, code M for money. It's $13.95 per thousand of gross receipts. This is a tax that's not in other localities. So we're putting a fair amount of burden already on developers to pay for things to help our city pay for many services, from street repair to cops and schools and other things. So we have to balance this. We don't want to kill the goose that's trying to lay the golden egg and get some housing built. And we want to address this very important issue of affordable housing, which is on many, many people's minds, and certainly our city council.
Well, Rachel, it's certainly a delicate balance, right? And so how do you know where that line is, where you have impact fees and other policies that are helping share the burden that the prosperity in the Bay Area is bringing, but not putting a stop to all the positive things that are happening here?
It's a great question. I say let's open the books. Let's just be open and honest. You get someone like Riaz in the room, you get someone like Amy in the room, and you say, okay, you guys, this is what it costs to build a multifamily. and this is what the developer is going to pay for the land with the construction, which keeps going up every day. This is what they're going to pay in taxes. Now, if you add an impact fee onto that, can that developer get the kind of rents that you need, which are also going up and up, to offset that impact fee? Many people think that developers are making so much money that they can. But there are many developers, and Riaz, feel free to weigh in, who will say, not so fast, you know, we're not making that much money yet. So let's get out there, let's have an open and honest discussion about this, let's look at the book, and this is what we've done with our impact fee study, where we've engaged the affordable housing community, we've engaged the private sector, and we all have to come to the table and be respectful and hear each other's issues.
So, Rachel, you know, I think, you know, if you look at the period like
Riaz Taplin from Riaz Inc., please.
Sorry. If you look at the period 2008 to 2012, there was probably not a better 4 years from a macroeconomic perspective, or 2013, to build housing, right? You had insanely low interest rates and insanely low construction costs due to the economic collapse in 2008. You know, coming into where we are right now, you know, construction costs are going up every day and rents are at the peak. So what we developers do to underwrite our projects is we look at, you know, how much can I charge in rent? And the reality is what you can charge in rent today may be more than you could have charged 2 years ago, but it also may be more than you can charge 2 years from now. So when I'm looking at underwriting a project, I don't just look at, okay, today I can get $3 a foot or $4 a foot. I say, look, you know, I may be only 34 years old, but I've been through the crash in 2001 and the crash in 2008, and I watched rents come down 30-40%, you know, basically overnight. So what I'm always looking to do is say, okay, if you look at historically, you know, over a period of time and you through a couple of economic cycles, how much beta is there in the rents? So your rents actually move up and down depending on what's happening in the market. So I always think about the long term. We build things to own them forever, right? So what I say is, like, over the next 10 years, how much could rents come down? You know, it'd be very easy to see from this peak how rents could come down by 30% in a market correction similar to what happened in 2001 or 2008. So if rents were to come down by 30%, could I still afford my debt service? Could I still afford to pay my operating expenses? And if I can afford to build off of rents that are 30% lower than today's market, I'm willing to build something. You know, that includes impact fees. Got to pay those up front. So, you know, I think that, you know, construction, you know, building housing is very sensitive to two things. How long does it take to get a permit, and construction costs, right? So the more you can do to reduce the amount of time it takes to get a permit, which, you know, Oakland has done an incredible job of, and reduce the cost, you will get more housing faster. So if you just look at other markets, you know, this is not, you know, we don't have to think about the Bay Area as a vacuum. If you look at, you know, Houston, Dallas, you know,
but
Charlotte.
What do a lot of people in the Bay Area say? We don't want to be like Houston and Dallas.
You may not want to be like Houston or Dallas, but at what cost are you willing to put the people, middle-income people through? You know, basically what you're saying is that we don't want there to be middle-income people in the Bay Area. By not providing enough housing for middle-income people, you're basically saying, look, you don't make enough money to live here, get out of the Bay Area. So, you know, and I don't think that's a fair thing. I think we should create enough housing so that middle-income people can afford to live in the Bay Area, so that, you know, the person who, you know, cleans, you know, makes the coffee, cleans house, can afford to live in the Bay Area. You know, the Bay Area that I grew up in, you know, the person who worked in our house, she lived in San Francisco. You know, her husband washed windows, she cleaned houses. They own a house in San Francisco because it wasn't that unaffordable to live here. You know, at these types of prices, you know, she could never dream of doing that. So I think we have a responsibility as, you know, citizens of the Bay Area to figure out a way to build more housing faster so that housing is not consuming a disproportionate share of your income. You know, nowhere else in the country does housing produce 103% of median, does the median home price produce 103% of median income. You know, it's unheard of.
Amy Fishman, I want to give you an opportunity from the Nonprofit Housing Association. How do you engage with developers around trying to find some win-wins here?
Well, I think the big issue is that we would agree that we would want streamlined permitting and streamlined processes for developments that include affordable housing. Inclusionary housing policies are critical. We just had a major win with the San Jose case, and we know that we're going to move forward on pushing for inclusionary around rental with many options around land dedication or in-lieu fees. But that's where we need the streamlining, because there is a big public benefit. Land is highly regulated everywhere, maybe not in places like Houston and Dallas, but as we talked about, the Bay Area is not that community, and there is a huge value to our communities in preserving and the racial and ethnic and cultural diversity of the Bay Area. And so what's not affordable is not investing in affordable housing, and what's not acceptable is just business as usual. So, yes, we need to see housing growth to meet the needs, but the needs is not the luxury housing that the market is producing. The market will never build to meet the needs of the workforce. So middle-income people and lower-income people will always be left out unless there is public investment. Housing should be seen just like transportation and education and healthcare. It's a foundation of our economy. It's a foundation of our communities. Employers are having a hard time recruiting and retaining workers. That's bad for business in the Bay Area. If families don't know how they're going to make ends meet and children have to transition from school to school and don't have a place to do homework, that's bad for our communities. And if our seniors can't stay living near their grandchildren and they don't know how to make ends meet on a fixed income, this is all bad for the Bay Area. And so, yes, we need to understand the economics of development, but we deeply need to understand the economics and the foundation of what's going to create a thriving, healthy community, and that's creating affordable homes near jobs, homes that are tagged to the incomes that people are earning. So no amount of building luxury housing is going to meet the need in the Bay Area. If we look at who is buying those luxury homes, it's often international or institutional investors. There's not the local residents that are coming in, or it might be somebody's second or third home. So the market is not working. And so, yes, we can do the analysis of the market all day long, but something needs to be different, and that's where the policies. And there's something that I want to put out there that I think all of us can agree on. There's a number of very important bills at the state level to increase public investment in affordable housing, to grow the amount of federal dollars that can go into affordable housing, and to also have policies where there's a permanent income source that goes to helping sustain and grow affordability in all of our communities. And finally, the other piece that I would say is we have to talk not just about growing new affordable housing, but on preserving existing housing. And there's a wide array of solutions there, anything from just cause eviction protections to condo conversion controls to no net loss policies. But it's absolutely critical that while we are growing the supply of affordable homes in the Bay Area, that we're not losing what we have, and we're not displacing people out of their existing communities.
Amy, can I?
Yes, please, Riaz, go ahead.
Can I jump in? You know, this idea that developers will not build affordable housing, I completely disagree with. You know, I'm working on two projects in Oakland right now, and I was just doing a little quick math on my little phone here. You know, if you take the median income in San Francisco, which is $73,000, you know, my project would consume 29% of that person's income. You know, this is well below, you know, acceptable ratios, right? I don't have a single dollar of subsidy. I'm not asking for, you know, $1 of help, and I'm going to go build 300 affordable units. You know, anybody who makes the median income in Oakland will be able to afford to live in my buildings, right? You know, and it was very simple. There was a relatively clear policy, a great city government, you know, that's working hard, that is responsive, and, you know, we will get these things out into the market significantly faster than we could ever have dreamed to do it in San Francisco. So I don't think that the problem is that the cost of getting a project built in San Francisco makes it so expensive because the process was made so complicated that you can only afford to build luxury housing. there's a confusion in the Bay Area as to what came first, right? We made it so complicated to build a single unit of housing that in order to make it economical, you have to rent it for a crazy price per square foot, which means by definition it's luxury housing. But if you make the process easy, you can make it affordable. So in Oakland, they've made the process easy, therefore you can produce affordable housing, right? You don't need more fees. You don't need more studies. You don't need more help from the state government. You don't need help from the federal government. You simply need the local government to make it simple. You don't have to make it like Texas. I'm not asking for the Bay Area to operate like Texas. You know, I don't want to live in Texas. I want to live in the Bay Area. It's like, pick any piece of land. Just decide what you want to do. Don't make it complicated. You want one apartment, you want two apartments, you want 100 apartments. Just decide, and then don't make the act of the separate the decision of what you want on the land from the act of getting a permit to build it, and you'll have a much more effective process, and you'll have a much more responsive housing market. The problem is there's been too much done to over-regulate the process of building anything, and we have the most cumbersome planning process in the entire world.
Okay, I want to take a break to give our callers and listeners a chance to call in and write in. You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing Bay Area real estate with our guests, Riaz Taplin, founder and CEO of Riaz, Inc., Amy Fishman, executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, Rachel Flynn, director of city planning in Oakland, and Naomi Glass, associate broker at Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment on our website, klw.org. Rachel Flynn, I want to turn to you, Director of City Planning in Oakland. Obviously, this is a very emotional issue for many people. As a public official, you need to balance the concerns of housing advocates with the concerns of developers. How do you go about getting everybody in the room and being able to come up with some consensus-based solutions?
Well, like I was saying earlier, we really need to be open-minded to all viewpoints, because just like what you're hearing tonight, people have good points from the private sector, from the nonprofit sector, from the affordable housing advocacy sector. This is a major issue in our city and in our region. And so you open up the dialogue with people in a respectful and open manner. And you also have to look at the facts and what, like Riaz was saying, what does it cost to build? How long does it take to get a permit? What is the reality for developers? And, you know, there are some developers who might only want to build luxury and they're just going to go for that top dollar. But we have many developers who really want to build for, you know, middle class workers, that millennial generation who's coming in, and they're designing their units accordingly with certain amenities, certain sizes that will make it affordable to them. So many are trying to do the right thing. But at the end of the day, developers are not the government. They're not nonprofit. They have to make a profit. So how do we balance that with also a government that has limited resources? We, as I was saying earlier, the feds every year, our block grant monies get cut. As you know, the governor cut our redevelopment funds. That was tens of millions of dollars that this city relied on to provide affordable housing. And that was the decision he made because he needed to look at the whole state and how he was going to balance the budget. But now we're left with how do we address these very real issues where people have serious concerns about either displacement or wanting to move into this area and afford it. And then the real question, what is government's role in this? Are we responsible for making sure that everyone who wants to live in the Bay Area can live here affordably? That's a big question. And I don't hear many people saying, I would love to pay more taxes. I'd love to do away with Prop 13. Please increase my property taxes. Please impose fees. We never get those questions or those suggestions. But we do get lots of requests for services and subsidies into many things in our city, including affordable housing. So it's a tough question, but one that is worth asking and answering in a respectful way.
Amy Fishman from the Nonprofit Housing Association, you mentioned earlier some state laws, bills working their way through the legislature that you thought everyone could get behind. I do want to look at kind of what can be done at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. But I wanted to circle back. Can you tell us about what some of the state-level policies that are currently being discussed are?
Great. Thanks so much for that question. So we are so fortunate that Speaker Toni Atkins is carrying a really important housing package. Housing is her number one issue, and we can all get behind what she is moving forward. So one of the centerpieces of her package is AB 1335. It's called Building Homes and Jobs Act. It's still in the Assembly. It will create $500 million a year, which is an ongoing sustainable source of funding for affordable homes that would also create about 30,000 good-paying jobs and thousands of new homes through a $75 recording fee on real estate documents, but it excludes those associated with home sales. So this is a really important bill that helps build back a piece of the funding that was lost when the governor slashed redevelopment. The two other pieces, one is AB 35. This is Chu in San Francisco is leading it with the Speaker Atkins, and it's passed the Assembly 78-0. So you can see there's a huge amount of support for it. AB 35 increases state tax credits by $300 million, which then turns around and leverages $600 million in new federal resources for the state. So it's a tremendous opportunity, and that's central to the Speaker's package. Another like bill that's not part of the Speaker's package, but similarly, is SB 377. That's Jim Bell's bill from the South Bay, and it's complementary. And what it does is it increases the value of each low-income housing tax credit by 40%. So without costing the state any additional revenue, it increases the value of these low-income housing tax credits. And that's the primary way that affordable housing is developed in the Bay Area, around California, and across the nation. And there are several other bills as well. One that you might be interested in particular, AB 1056, which allocates 33% of the budget savings under Proposition 47 for rapid rehousing programs aimed at housing formerly incarcerated people. So there's some really great bills at the state level. People need to speak up and tell their state legislators that they are fully behind these bills that are going to help grow the supply of funding for affordable housing.
Riaz Taplin, as a developer, how familiar are you with these bills, and what and which ones of them are you behind as well?
You know, I think I'm not very familiar with any of them, to be honest. But you know, in general, I'm supportive of anything we can do to create more affordable housing opportunities here in the Bay Area. You know, Amy, you're probably more familiar with this than I am, but it's my understanding that the city and county of San Francisco now has a very large pot of money for affordable housing, and the issue actually isn't getting more money into the kitty. It's deploying the resources that have been made available to the affordable housing funds is more of an issue than actually getting more funds in.
Yeah, I would actually disagree, because where I definitely agree is that we can do more to streamline the process to help build affordable housing in the system and streamline any market rate development that includes affordable housing, which all developments in San Francisco do based on their inclusionary policies there. But the issue is not that somehow there's enough money and we just can't get it out the door fast enough, or we can't spend it because there's not developments. There is a long line of projects. There's a huge pipeline of affordable housing that got completely stalled in that period of time that redevelopment was in play and then got cut. And so what we need to do is build back those resources and get the pipeline flowing again, because for every dollar that's available to build affordable housing, we've got the need for 10, 20, 100 more dollars to help grow the supply of what we need.
And I'd like to let our callers weigh in now. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing Bay Area real estate with our guests, Riaz Taplin, founder and CEO of Riaz Inc., Amy Fishman, executive director of the nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, Rachel Flynn, director of city planning in Oakland, and Naomi Glass, associate broker at Caldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Again, the number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org. And let's now go to Lisa in San Francisco. Lisa, welcome to City Visions.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. So my name's Lisa, and I'm a nurse practitioner. I live and work in San Francisco. And my nature of the question kind of switches gears a little bit. I've been trying to buy a house for about 2 or 3 years now, and I keep getting overbid or I don't get to buy a house because people are outbidding with cash. And I find this really frustrating because I have 20% down, I have great credit, but I can't seem to win a house because someone always has more cash than I do.
You got to move to Oakland.
That's Rachel Flynn, Director of City Planning in Oakland.
We'd be glad to have you.
Yeah, you know, I work here in San Francisco. I bike to work, and I love the community that I have here. And that's, you know, one thing that I just haven't been able to settle on yet is I really want to stay in San Francisco. It seems impossible.
I think that's so important, and I think that your experience, Lisa, is the experience of people all over the Bay Area. There is so much cash out there chasing too few homes, and it's what has happened. It's in the aftermath of the foreclosure crisis that all this pent-up demand and all the resources that were sucked out of everybody's home who got foreclosed and got consolidated with all of these investors out there, these all cash down investors, and it's impossible for people to compete. So there has to be policies to address the speculative investment that is going on right now, because not everybody with an all cash offer is someone who's actually going to live in that home and contribute to the San Francisco community or whatever community that person is putting their, or that institution is putting their money down. Because in Oakland, we're seeing the same pattern. There is lots of people there with all cash offers. And so this is a symptom of a larger problem that's broken, and it needs many, you know, we have many solutions to help try and address this. But one of them is to cut down on the speculative investment and try and potentially put fees or taxes on those who are holding properties, residential properties that aren't living there.
Naomi Glass, Caldwell Banker, you wanted to get in on this question.
Yeah, Lisa, I have some ideas for you. I don't think it's as dismal as you state, because what you need to do is you really need to differentiate yourself from the 2 to 10 other buyers out there. I've worked with many, many buyers who actually get the deal and they don't have the highest price. Sellers are not necessarily always looking for just the bottom line. I think it's very important to try to sense who the seller is and align yourself with a lender. And there are lenders out there who can close in 14 days. So you can close very quickly as opposed to a normal 30-day closing with a typical lender. There are lenders that do close very quickly. And also, I would recommend that you write a compelling letter. You try to sense who the seller is. I can think of many, many instances where buyers have written very personal, heartfelt letters. They've really connected with the seller on an emotional level, and they've gotten their offer accepted on a personal basis. So you need to find an agent who's able to differentiate you from the group, so you're not just looked at as a number.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Lisa. Let's now go to Sue in Oakland. Sue, welcome to City Visions.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I'd like to know if the city governments have reached out or if any programs have been created, you know, to tap into the enormous wealth of some of the billionaires that have, you know, made their income from this area. Like, can't they fund some programs that would either provide microloans or loans to people that, say, wanted to move into a not a very good neighborhood and they're willing to remodel the house, but they don't have the money? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of creative-type solutions to these problems, and I don't see so many of them. I mean, but, you know, I could be wrong, but I'm asking, has there really been some brainstorming about creative solutions, creative programs that would somehow utilize all the vacant buildings, you know, and all the, you know, blighted places to provide more housing?
Sue, I think that's a great idea, and we are doing a lot of that brainstorming and strategizing, and we welcome everyone and anyone who is listening to start thinking about who is out there and how can we get people who have really benefited from the growth and development of the Bay Area, how they can reinvest back into local housing trust funds, into providing resources, gap financing, so that, you know, but for that, you know, $5 or $10 million, that housing would be built. Another thing that I want to mention in terms of looking creatively at solutions, one of the things that counties are seeing across the Bay Area and beyond is that there are cost-effective solutions to the problem of homelessness. Now, I know that's not the topic of the conversation today, but I think it's a really important one, and it's central to how we have to think about our housing problem. It's not just about people who are making $100,000 a year, but people who are really at the bottom and need the supports to make the community the community that we all want. And so one of the things that we've seen is, what's the solution to homelessness? Well, lo and behold, it's providing housing. Because when people don't have a home, there are a tremendous amount of resources that are going to support that person who is in crisis, going from a shelter to an emergency room and back again. And instead, if we took those resources and invested it into supportive housing, housing with services, we not only create a much better solution for that person to have a roof over their head, we actually save money for the county. Another aspect of this is senior housing. There are many people living in nursing homes, not because they need that level of care, but because they don't have a place to go. So if we invest that money instead in senior housing with services that's affordable, we move them out of the nursing homes, and lo and behold, we save thousands and thousands of dollars that can get reinvested back in. And these solutions are being looked at through the healthcare reform and the Medicare reform possibilities. And I think we're going to see a lot more of these kinds of creative solutions to how housing is the solution to many other issues like health expenses.
Amy Fishman, Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, thank you for your response to Sue's question. Riaz Taplin, I also know that you want to respond.
Sue, I think it's a great question. You know, the federal government actually has an incredible program to help people with no money buy homes. And it's an incredible program to actually help people with no money buy homes that require work. So the FHA has a program, Federal Housing Association, where if you have 3.5% down, so let's take the median home price in Oakland of $507,750, and you have 3.5% down, which is, you know, $18,000, you can buy a home. You know, I've helped people in Oakland, who I know buy homes with as little as $7,000 down, and the home needed an enormous amount of renovation. You know, this friend of mine, she bought a home for $250,000. It needed $50,000 of work. She was able to roll it all into one FHA loan. I think she put down a total of, it was $11,000 actually. And she now gets enough rent from her other unit such that she lives in the upper unit of the house for free. And she just took the initiative to go find a home that needed some work where she could get a long close. I think one thing that could help people, you know, in picking back off of what Naomi was saying, the problem with the FHA program is it takes too long to close. So if there was something that if there was a program out there that enabled people to get a bridge loan until they were getting an FHA loan, you know, that would do a lot to help people that don't have large down payments get into homes.
Thank you very much for your call, Sue. Let's now go to Pam from San Mateo. Pam, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. One thing that I've noticed is missing from your discussion this evening is the question of population density. I noticed that one of your participants was talking about Texas and the ease in housing there, and he brought up the Dallas area, and I actually am somewhat familiar with the Dallas area, and I can tell you he's talking about an area that encompasses about 9,000 square miles when you talk about Dallas-Fort Worth. And in that area, they have only about 7 million people. We have more than that in the Bay Area now, and the population density in San Francisco itself is over 10,000 people per square mile. I think you're not, no matter what you do here, there's no way you're going to get all the people who might want to live in San Francisco itself there, are you? I mean, how can you, what can you do to increase the density without really having a negative impact on the quality of life for the people who live there?
I think this is a great question. So if you think about San Francisco, you know, yes, it's more dense than your average American city. And at the risk of getting associated as the great, you know, flag bearer for Texas, you know, let me try and pivot a little bit. So take, you know, a couple of European cities. For example, London. If San Francisco had the same density as London, which I don't think anybody would argue is an unlivable city, you know, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's just consistent, there would be 2.4 million people in San Francisco. If you take a city like Paris, if San Francisco had the same density as Paris, not Texas, not New York, Paris, one of the most gorgeous cities in the world, there'd be 4.8 million people in San Francisco. What both of these cities did, especially Paris, you know, Haussmann built Paris in, you know, in the latter part of the 19th century with a very consistent planning philosophy, which is that you had five stories of residential above one story of commercial, and it was just very consistent. So you had a human scale to the buildings around you. You could support urban mixed-use policies, you know, 150 years ago. So I think there is a lot of room for increased density. It may not be in areas like, you know, SoMa. You're not going to be able to upzone SoMa any further. But a large parts of San Francisco could be upzoned to allow for, forget, you know, a 10-story building. Just do a 3-story building like London or a 6-story building like Paris, and you could get an enormous amount of increased density. It would be greener because you could support urban services. You know, you could support more, you know, neighborhood retail. So that without making it like, you know, New York, there's a lot you can do.
And I, just to jump in, would say I wholeheartedly support that, that there is so much we can do with medium density, especially building along transit corridors. And what that does is it not only gets people living close to transit and jobs, it reduces greenhouse gases from people driving all the time, and it reduces the congestion on the roads. So better planning so that you have people live near close to work, near transit, and instead of what is happening now, that often, you know, because the density is not necessarily being built in the inner Bay Area, there's often the sort of sprawl that's happening in the suburbs. And the suburbs absolutely need to do their fair share of development, and including affordable housing and all of the building that is happening all around the region. And at the state level, there's investments now of the cap-and-trade funds in low-income communities and in affordable housing, because there's broad recognition that when you build affordable homes near transit, it improves our transit systems with increased ridership, and it reduces how much people are driving. And so I think that, yes, density is something that we need to look at and really understand and plan for it. And if we plan for it well, it could actually improve many of the systems in the Bay Area.
So in Oakland, we have planned for density and allow it in certainly the Central Business District and in most of the BART, what we call TOD areas, transit-oriented development. So that hasn't been an issue for us zoning-wise. It's an issue with developers, not all of whom can make the numbers work with high-rise construction, because then you're going from wood construction, which is the cheaper, to steel and concrete, which is the more expensive. But we're just starting to see the viability of that in this last year.
Pam, thank you very much for your call. We have time for one more quick phone call. John from San Francisco, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. One comment, I kind of agree with Pam, and there's probably 8 billion people on this planet, and I'm sure they would all love to live in the Bay Area. And I wonder if your guests can comment on, do they think everyone on the planet is entitled to live where my family's been for 5 generations? Because the guests also mentioned when people get priced out or chased out of their neighborhoods, and the key word there was their neighborhood. So who does the neighborhood belong to, and should there be criteria for people at either end of the economic spectrum who are flocking here, some with a lot of money and some who are willing to sleep in the park? At what point does a city or a region able to limit its own growth and shut the door? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, John, for your question. And obviously, you raise a lot of issues that are going to take a lot more than the couple of minutes we have left on the program. But I think the fundamental question is, how do you balance folks who are here, who have been here from generations, with the interest of many other people who want to come here? When you're looking at San Francisco, you're looking at an area surrounded by water on three sides. Amy Fishman, we only have a few minutes left, so I'd love to get your quick response to this caller.
Yeah, I think what the caller raises is really important, and that's where anti-displacement policies and tenant protection policies need to come into play. There has to be smart growth that happens, and that smart growth has to be equitable, and it has to be inclusive, and it can't be about displacing long-time generations of communities, especially in neighborhoods that we've, you know, have been brought up in this conversation. Some of the more culturally rich neighborhoods that have been historically African American or Latino or Asian, those are critical resources we need to preserve and protect and not have people flooding into those communities and displacing those very people out of the area. And so really coming forward with aggressive anti-displacement policies and tenant and neighborhood protection policies while still creating inclusive places to live. It's very important, and there's a number of tools and solutions, and it's not easy, but it's really critical.
Rachel Flynn, you're going to get the last word here. We just have about 30 seconds left, but as Director of City Planning in Oakland, how would you respond to the caller? Rachel Flynn, did we lose you here at the end?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had hit the mute button. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem at all.
I would say that we have to find the balance because government can't do it all. We just don't have the resources. But we have to get creative about good policies that are fair and realize that we live in a market economy that has to work in and of itself as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all our guests very much for joining us this evening. That's City Visions. Our guests tonight were Riaz Taplin, founder and CEO of Riaz, Inc., Amy Fishman, executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of North Carolina, Rachel Flynn, director of city planning in Oakland, and Naomi Glass, associate broker at Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. Join host Joseph Pace next Monday as he discusses the true cost of fashion. This is David Onick. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.